Chapter 21. And trim for some time between the two, not without countenancing and assisting at the same time many of Jack's followers. But finding no possibility of reconciling all the three brothers, because each would be master, and allow no other salves, powders, or plasters to be used but his own, she discarded all three, and set up a shop for those of her own farm, well furnished with powders, plasters, salves, and all other drugs necessary, all right and true, composed according to receipts made by physicians and apothecaries of her own creating, which they extracted out of Peter's and Martin's and Jack's receipt books, and of this medley or hodgepodge made up a dispensatory of their own, strictly forbidding any other to be used, and particularly Peter's, from which the greatest part of this new dispensatory was stolen. How the lady, farther to confirm this change, wisely imitating her father, degraded Peter from the rank he pretended as eldest brother, and set up herself in his place as head of the family, and ever after wore her father's old cap with the fine feather he had got from Peter for standing his friend, which has likewise been worn with no small ostentation to this day by all her successors, though declared enemies to Peter. How Lady Bess and her physicians, being told of many defects and imperfections in their new medley dispensatory, resolve on a further alteration, to purge it from a great deal of Peter's trash, that still remained in it, but were prevented by her death. How she was succeeded by a North Country Farmer 162, who pretended great skill in the managing of farms, though he could never govern his own poor little farm, nor yet this large new one, after he got it. How this new landlord, to show his valor and dexterity, fought against enchanters, weeds, giants, and windmills, and claimed great honor for his victories. How his successor, no wiser than he, occasioned great disorders by the new methods he took to manage his farms. How he attempted to establish in his northern farm the same dispensatory 162 be used in the southern, but miscarried, because Jack's powders, pills, salves, and plasters were there in great vogue. How the author finds himself embarrassed for having introduced into his history a new sect different from the three he had undertaken to treat of, and how his inviolable respect to the sacred number three obliges him to reduce these four, as he intends to do all other things, to that number, and for that end to drop the former Martin, and to substitute in his place Lady Bess's institution, which is to pass under the name of Martin in the sequel of this true history. This weighty point being cleared, the author goes on, and describes mighty quarrels and squabbles between Jack and Martin, how sometimes the one had the better and sometimes the other, to the great desolation of both farms, till at last both sides concur to hang up the landlord 162C, who pretended to die a martyr for Martin, though he had been true to neither side, and was suspected by many to have a great affection for Peter. A digression on the nature, usefulness, and necessity of wars and quarrels. This being a matter of great consequence, the author intends to treat it methodically, and at large in a treatise apart, and here to give only some hints of what his large treatise contains. The state of war, natural to all creatures. War is an attempt to take by violence from others a part of what they have and we want. Every man, fully sensible of his own merit, and finding it not duly regarded by others, has a natural right to take from them all that he thinks due to himself, and every creature, finding its own wants more than those of others, has the same right to take everything its nature requires. Brutes, much more modest in their pretensions this way than men, and mean men more than great ones. The higher one raises his pretensions this way, the more bustle he makes about them, and the more success he has, the greater hero. Thus greater souls, in proportion to their superior merit, claim a greater right to take everything from meaner folks. This the true foundation of grandeur and heroism, and of the distinction of degrees among men. War, therefore, necessary to establish subordination, and to found cities, kingdoms, and see, as also to purge bodies politic of gross humors. Wise princes find it necessary to have wars abroad, to keep peace at home. War, famine, and pestilence, the usual cures for corruption in bodies politic. A comparison of these three, the author is to write a panegyric on each of them. The greatest part of mankind loves war more than peace. They are but few and mean-spirited that live in peace with all men. The modest and meek of all kinds always a prey to those of more noble or stronger appetites. The inclination to war universal, those that cannot or dare not make war in person employ others to do it for them. This maintains bullies, bravos, cutthroats, lawyers, soldiers, and see most professions would be useless if all were peaceable. Hence brutes want neither smiths nor lawyers, magistrates, nor joiners, soldiers or surgeons. Brutes having but narrow appetites are incapable of carrying on or perpetuating war against their own species, or of being led out in troops and multitudes to destroy one another. These prerogatives proper to man alone. The excellency of human nature demonstrated by the vast train of appetites, passions, wants, and see, that attend it. This matter to be more fully treated in the author's panegyric on mankind. The history of Martin continued. How Jack, having got rid of the old landlord, set up another to his mind, quarreled with Martin, and turned him out of doors. How he pillaged all his shops, and abolished his whole dispensatory. How the new landlord, 164, laid about him, mauled Peter, worried Martin, and made the whole neighborhood tremble. How Jack's friends fell out among themselves, split into 1,000 parties, turned all things topsy-turvy, till everybody grew weary of them, and at last, the blustering landlord dying, Jack was kicked out of doors, a new landlord, 164b, brought in, and Martin re-established. How this new landlord let Martin do what he pleased, and Martin agreed to everything his pious landlord desired, provided Jack might be kept low. Of several efforts Jack made to raise up his head, but all in vain, till at last the landlord died, and was succeeded by one, 164c, who was a great friend to Peter, who, to humble Martin, gave Jack some liberty. How Martin grew enraged at this, called in a foreigner, 164d, and turned out the landlord, in which Jack concurred with Martin, because this landlord was entirely devoted to Peter, into whose arms he threw himself, and left his country. How the new landlord secured Martin in the full possession of his former rights, but would not allow him to destroy Jack, who had always been his friend. How Jack got up his head in the north, and put himself in possession of a whole canton, to the great discontent of Martin, who finding also that some of Jack's friends were allowed to live and get their bread in the south parts of the country, grew highly discontented with the new landlord he had called into his assistance. How this landlord kept Martin in order, upon which he fell into a raging fever, and swore he would hang himself or join in with Peter, unless Jack's children were all turned out to starve. Of several attempts to cure Martin, and make peace between him and Jack, that they might unite against Peter, but all made ineffectual by the great address of a number of Peter's friends, that herded among Martin's, and appeared the most zealous for his interest. How Martin, getting abroad in this mad fit, looked so like Peter in his air and dress, and talked so like him, that many of the neighbors could not distinguish the one from the other, especially when Martin went up and down strutting in Peter's armor, which he had borrowed to fight Jack, 165. What remedies were used to cure Martin's distemper? Here the author being seized with a fit of dullness, to which he is very subject, after having read a poetical epistle addressed to it entirely composed his senses, so that he has not read a line since. N.B.B. Some things that follow after this are not in the MS, but seem to have been written since, to fill up the place of what was not thought convenient then to print. a project for the universal benefit of mankind. The author, having labored so long, and done so much to serve, and instruct the public, without any advantage to himself, has at last thought of a project which will tend to the great benefit of all mankind, and produce a handsome revenue to the author. He intends to print by subscription, in 96 large volumes in folio, an exact description of Terra Australis Incognita, collected with great care, and prints from 999 learned and pious authors of undoubted veracity. The whole work, illustrated with maps and cuts agreeable to the subject, and done by the best masters, will cost but 1 guinea each volume to subscribers, 1 guinea to be paid in advance, and afterwards 1 guinea on receiving each volume, except the last. This work will be of great use for all men, and necessary for all families, because it contains exact accounts of all the provinces, colonies, and mansions of that spacious country, where, by a general doom, all transgressors of the law are to be transported. And everyone having this work may choose out the fittest and best place for himself, there being enough for all, so as everyone shall be fully satisfied. The author supposes that 1 copy of this work will be bought at the public charge, or out of the parish rates, for every parish church in the 3 kingdoms, and in all the dominions thereunto belonging, and that every family that can command £10 per annum, even though retrenched from less necessary expenses, will subscribe for 1. He does not think of giving out above 9 volumes nearly, and considering the number requisite, he intends to print at least 100,000 for the first edition. He is to print proposals against next term, with a specimen, and a curious map of the capital city with its 12 gates, from a known author, who took an exact survey of it in a dream. Considering the great care and pains of the author, and the usefulness of the work, he hopes everyone will be ready, for their own good as well as his, to contribute cheerfully to it, and not grudge him the profit he may have by it, especially if he comes to a 3rd or 4th edition, as he expects it will very soon. He doubts not, but it will be translated into 2 foreign languages by most nations of Europe, as well as Asia and Africa, being of as great use to all those nations as to his own. For this reason he designs to procure patents and privileges for securing the whole benefit to himself from all those different princes and states, and hopes to see many millions of this great work printed in those different countries and languages before his death. After this business is pretty well established, he has promised to put a friend on another project almost as good as this, by establishing insurance offices everywhere for securing people from shipwreck, and several other accidents in their voyage to this country, and these officers shall furnish, at a certain rate, pilots well versed in the route, and that know all the rocks, shelves, quicksands, and sea, that such pilgrims and travelers may be exposed to. Of these he knows a great number ready instructed in most countries. But the whole scheme of this matter he is to draw up at large, and communicate to his friend. Footnotes. 50. The number of livings in England. Pate. 51. Distinguished, new, told by no other tongue. Horace. 51b. Eating prefaces, and c. Swift's note in the margin. 56. Plutarch. Swift's note in the margin. 56b. Xenophon. Swift's note in the margin, marked, in future, S. 56c. Spleen. Horace. 59. To return, and view the cheerful skies, in this the task and mighty labor lies. Dryden's Urgell, 60, hath the old may withdraw into safe ease. 61. In his subsequent apology for the tale of a tub, Swift wrote of these machines that, in the original manuscript there was a description of a 4th, which those who had the papers in their power blotted out, as having something in it of satire, that I suppose they thought was too particular, and therefore they were forced to change it to the number 3, when some have endeavored to squeeze out a dangerous meaning that was never thought on. And indeed the conceit was half spoiled by changing the numbers, that of four being much more Kabbalistic, and therefore better exposing the pretended virtue of numbers, a superstition then intended to be ridiculed. 62. Under the rainy sky, in the meetings of three, and of four ways. 62b, Lucretius, lib. 2. S. 62c, tis certain then, the voice that thus can wound, is all material body, every sound. 63, to be burnt or worm-eaten. 64, the Royal Society first met at Gresham College, the resort of men of science. Will's Coffee House was the resort of wits and men of letters. 65, viz. About moving the earth. S. 65b, Virtuoso Experiments and Modern Comedies. S. 67, he lived 1,000. S. 67b, viz. In the year 1697, S. Dryden died in 1700, and the publication of the Ale of a Tub, written in 1697, was not until 1704. 69, the title page in the original was so torn, that it was not possible to recover several titles which the author here speaks of. S. 69b, see Virgil translated, and C. S. 70, Peter, the Church of Rome, Martin, the Reformed Church as established by authority in England, Jack, the dissenters from the English Church establishment, Martin, named probably from Martin Luther, Jack, from John Calvin. The coats are the coats of righteousness, in which all servants of God should be clothed, alike in love and duty, however they may differ in opinion. 71. Covetousness, ambition, and pride, which were the three great vices that the ancient fathers inveighed against as the first corruptions of Christianity. W. Wotton. 72. The tailor. 72b, a sacred monkey. 75, the Roman Catholics were considered by the Reformers to have added to the simple doctrines of Christianity inventions of their own, and to have laid a special stress on the adoption of them. Upon Swift's saying of the three brothers, now the coats their father had left them were, it is true, of very good cloth, and besides so neatly sewn, that you would swear they were all of a piece, but, at the same time, very plain, with little or no ornament, W. Wotton observes. His is the distinguishing character of the Christian religion. Christiana religio absoluta a simplex, was Ammianus Marcellinus's description of it, who was himself a heathen. But the learned Peter argues that, if a doctrine cannot be found, totidum verbis, in so many words, it may be found in so many syllables, or Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.